New charges against Goldman Sachs in the multi-billion dollar 1MDB scandal. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Malaysian officials have filed criminal charges against Goldman Sachs and two former employees. The corruption probe involving the state fund 1MDB is the subject of investigations in at least six countries. Tom Wright is a Wall Street Journal reporter and co-author of Billion Dollar Whale.
Goldman Sachs entered this story because they helped the 1MDB fund raise money on international bond markets in 2012 and 2013. And the US already has indicted two former Goldman bankers, one of whom, Timothy Leisner, a former partner, pleaded guilty. And those charges were made public in November. But what's happened today is the Malaysian authorities have filed criminal charges against Goldman Bank itself, as well as Tim Leisner and Roger Ng. That's the first time the bank has been named in criminal charges. Malaysia is alleging that Goldman broke Malaysian securities laws by omitting certain facts from the bond documents that accompany these kind of issuances. And they're saying that because the bond documents didn't lay out that the money was going to be stolen, Goldman is somehow in contravention of Malaysian securities laws. Goldman itself is saying that these charges are misdirected and they're going to vigorously defend them.
What does this mean for Goldman Sachs?
Well, I'm not sure what it means practically in the short term. I think one thing that Malaysia's doing here is they're staking their claim to any money that Goldman may be fined. And it looks like Goldman may face a civil penalty in the US, not a criminal penalty, but a civil penalty for its role in this scandal. I think the Malaysia's Attorney General is very keen to ensure that it stakes claim to any money that Goldman is fined because it wants to get back the money that's been lost here in this scandal.
Tom Wright, let's do the numbers. Global stocks steady despite trouble in European retail. Investors are looking ahead to two crucial meetings. The Fed is expected to raise rates on Wednesday and any new stimulus measures announced at a conference in China this week. Now, Nissan has held its first board meeting since firing Chairman Carlos Ghosn for financial misconduct. On the agenda, the search for a successor, the need to strengthen governance, and a request from its French partner, Renault, to hold an emergency shareholder meeting. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes has more.
It appears Nissan's management is in no hurry to call such a meeting. Renault owns 43% of Nissan's voting shares, and so would dominate any shareholder meeting. It's clear there is deep disagreement between the French parent company and Nissan over what has happened to Carlos Ghosn. He remains Renault's CEO, and the company says its own investigation of his financial affairs has turned up no evidence of wrongdoing. Behind all of this is the question of who controls Nissan and who will choose Carlos Ghosn's successor. So far, Renault appears determined to hold on to its control and to choosing the next Nissan chairman.
Rupert Wingfield Hayes, the board has now agreed to take independent advice on those issues. The United Nations needs more than $350 million for Palestinian territories after the U.S. cut funding this year. The Gaza Strip has been under blockade from Israel and Egypt, too, leading to a surge in refugees and 50% unemployment. The BBC's Michelle Hussein visited a refugee camp with Matthias Schmaller of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees.
This is where the day starts for most families. More than 90% of the population don't have access to safe drinking water.
What we're seeing happen is that people are bringing jerry cans to a series of taps in the wall and they're filling them up.
Our health staff tell me it's undrinkable, but people drink it. We are very close to the sea, so the groundwater has high levels of salination, and the desalination system in Gaza has broken down. The reason it's broken down is electricity.
When you say that people are living in poverty, why is that?
The answer to that is 12 years of blockade. We live in a place that is very small, 40 kilometers by 6 to 12 kilometers, and there's almost 2 million people living in this constrained space, and it's completely sealed off from the rest of the world.
Hamas is governing Gaza. Shouldn't it be providing for people here rather than you?
Yes, I think the responsibility of host authorities is to provide essential services like electricity, like water, like proper sewage. And I think the fact that much of that is non-functional is a reflection of 10 years of failed government.
We've now walked into what is a small UN compound within the camp. And this, Matthias, is a food distribution centre.
This is one of our 15 food distribution centres. About 60% of the million people that get food for us living with abject poverty. That means on about a dollar a day. So about 600,000 people really depend on this food. They would not survive if they didn't have this.
Who pays for all of this food?
You know, the biggest donor up until the beginning of this year was the United States. For Gaza, we need roughly $110 million per year. As a result of their dramatic cut at the beginning of the year, we ran out of money for this at the end of June. We were only able to continue it, and what you're seeing today, because the rest of the organization gave us an advance.
We took a loan.
The rest of the UN.
So what are you going to do in the long run?
My hope is that the appeals to the international community to prevent Gaza sliding into a Yemen-style of situation of massive hunger will be heard. The disasters I've had encountered were either natural, a tsunami, an earthquake, or man-made in terms of war. This is the first time I'm confronted with a humanitarian crisis that is entirely man-made as a result of the blockade. Natural disasters are uncontrollable. This is controllable.
Matthias Schmaler there of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Remember, get in touch on Twitter. Use the hashtag BBC Marketplace. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.